Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or you also can go to the YouTube feed, which is posted many places, Facebook, Twitter, and of course the discussion board. That stream I will also be doing. So enjoy that. Obviously, if you want to interact with most of the people in the chat room, unfortunately, the best place in that is TalkShoe. And to use TalkShoe, I really need to use Chrome. Moving onward, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. If you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. If you don't pick up, please leave a message. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I got multiple accounts on that. One of those, of course, is the SFU On Call Twitter account, which is for the podcast. I also have a personal account called Paul Franz. That's PAULFRNZ. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PAULFRNZ. And of course, I have my business account, which is Franz Games, which I accidentally posted the podcast on, had to retweet it to the SFU On Call, which is kind of weird. But anyway, that was done. Also, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. We have, of course, this is the first week of the month. So that means that what happened? A to B posted 33 new ships onto the Shapeways. Also, good news, Steve Cole's surgery went well on Monday of last week. Give him some new energy, and he's really recovering well. And just keep him in your thoughts and your prayers. Steve Patrick, busy working on SFB updates, and also the Gorn Master Starship book, and also did a report on the B draft of the Merchants of Federation. Gene was busy working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision. Seems to be really working hard on that the past couple weeks. I've definitely noticed that if you follow her on Facebook, she's posting about it a lot. And also, this week is, I think, it's a 5-year anniversary with adopting Wolf, you know. So she's posted quite a few things on that this week. I think it might have been today. But it was like plastering her feed. Also, she proofread a few pages for the Capitalog number 53, and also was busy managing, of course, Facebook and also Twitter, and being busy with all those marketing things and keeping the customers happy and beating whatever. Moving on to the SFB Online tournaments. The Masters Tournament actually have one more game completed, so there's 5 of the 8 round 2 games that were played. Basically, I finished my game later on that. More on that later in this podcast. On the Rad 48 Tournament, again, it's stuck. Actually, we have some people who are just going to drop out because they're just tired of people just waiting and not playing a game that they're supposed to be playing. We'll talk about later that on that subject later on in the podcast. Maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. And of course, the library report. Unfortunately, no progress, but that's okay. I'm still happy about the Paladin progress that we've had in the past couple weeks. You know, because currently the percentage complete is up to 73.2, which is awesome to see. And I still haven't done one thing which I really need to do, which is divide and conquer. Find out. Okay, I did a little cleaning up earlier. I did some last month, which got rid of some of the ones that we had definitely not had planned on doing. Actually, need to be removed from the library. And then there is, of course, I need to divide up what SSDs are. You know, what are PFs? What are SHIPs? What are Omegas? You know, what's a definitive line? Hopefully, I can come up with a division of work by next week. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's just me and Dave, and it's going to be awesome. What we're going to start off with, actually, which I didn't mention in the topics for this evening, because I totally forgot, and I got a brain fart. I apologize for those who are joining us, or joining us even late. And that is that I totally forgot that there were new Shapeways miniatures out this past week. And so we're going to do a quick review of those miniatures, and then we'll move onward to the other topics for this evening. And I figure we'll start with the miniatures. We'll get through them real quick. So those of you who like the miniatures, you can stop by the store, you know, the Shapeway stores for ADB, and you get to see these beautiful miniatures. And I'll just give you a quick overview of those things that are there. And of course, more importantly, which ones are, whether ones I like and dislike, some of the things I do and do not like of the current ones that have been released. There were 33 of them. Looks like some pretty cool. Oh, I like those. Those are neat. Wow. Okay. We'll get back to it. Okay, we'll start with the Hydran light dreadnought. You know, standard Hydran fare. I like this. This little part here, which is basically for the fighters. I like that kind of detail. That's one of those things I like, and I think this is probably just larger. Yeah, this is a larger version of the same thing, so no big deal there. Let me see, what is the size of this? Because this looks awfully big compared to the light. I'll switch that to inches because I can't understand centimeters. Wow, that's a pretty big ship. Two and, let's say, a little more than 1/4 inches long. That's pretty big. One and 2/3, sorry, not 2/3, 3/4 wide, and so that's a fairly large ship. So what's the size class? It's 3125. Wow, pretty large ship. Other than that, which, like the detail, definitely it's what you imagine what an Orca war cruiser would look like from the Zindi. Sorry, from the Wynn. The Orca ships. You got the Mako Destroyer. Nice adjustment. Smaller engines. More streamlined. More stretched out. Definitely appropriate. Looks quite nice. You know, it's not the best. Of course, I always like those goofy ones. Okay. This one I like better, and the reason is pretty simple. Because of the engines here, the pylons here are much smaller. This looks like a normal ship. The other ones look kind of disproportionate kind of thing. This is what I like to see, you know. But I understand that you have to have differences in the different sizes, because this is a frigate, right? Now, this is the frigate, and then you had, of course, the war cruiser, and you had the destroyer. So, it's understandable on the size differences. Oh, yeah. These are... I just like the okay. The Soldra. Just because of how abnormal they are, with all the spikes and all, I think that's a great detail, you know. And the soldiers surviving, However, the surviving fled back to Black Sun system, where they would steadily buy their time and build up their resources. You know, I'm not gonna go through and read all of that because I don't think you guys want me to sit here and read that. Makes sense. Cut back on the spikes. Nice thin for a light cruiser. Again, you know, these abnormal ships, I always like those. Okay, where's these? The Mazeron. Oh, advanced fighters. Okay. Ooh. Let's see if. There it is. That's cool. That is cool. And of course, you got the flat Mazeron ships, strike carrier. The weird part, I like this design. Maybe because to me, this is what, if you ever created a ship for outer space, this is the kind of ship you'd see. It's kind of blocky. It's tightly together. You know, maybe the funny part is I just watched Solo last night. So I'm kind of inspired by the Millennium Falcon, where basically it's a pretty tight ship. And then what's out the back, that strip, which basically is a big engine, is what it is. And that this kind of reminds me of that, in that kind of design. So that's the kind of thing that I personally like. Yeah, agreed. Dave's mentioned that the androids hate the Star Wars because all the damage is degradation, basically nothing into energy, which I agree is quite annoying. But again, I'm pretty sure that these things actually rotate. Let me just. Okay, I don't see it. Because when I heard that these turrets actually rotate, there actually might be separate pieces. It does not say, unfortunately. I don't see it. Whether it's a single piece or multiple pieces. Variant material, unpainted, unstained finish. Okay. Right, and then you have the different ones.
Blue.
Okay, to me, having different colors, unless you... I see no reason other than if you want to have... use it as kind of your... base, you know, like the primer coat. The idea is that you will have a different color in the background, and then you paint it with another color, or you want just to have different colors for like different sides of a battle, you know. Look, okay, again, another Warp Light Destroyer, just to remove the back end. Nothing too incredible. Vari. The Vari Wing Cruiser. Oh, doesn't that look sweet? This is the kind, I said, it's kind of compact. Not like the Romulans, which is like, woo, let's fly like a bird. You know, that kind of thing. But it's more compact. I like that kind of design. That compact design here. Heck, if Steve Cole said, no, this is the Romulan, I'd be happy. Because I'd say that's a really cool Romulan design. But, you know, in this case, it is the Vari. Actually, I just want that. And Got also okay. I already said the. I'll show you the one wings. There's different sizes again. I'm not going to show you every single size. And the mauler. Okay, let me just look at something because I think the only way to see it is going to be looking up close. Okay, right. That kind of thing. Which is these right here. Oh, there it is. There it is. This stuff. This is something that you normally wouldn't see in the Mahler. Of course, this is kind of cool. They've got the bird on the inlaid underneath. You know. So this is supposed to be representing. Okay, hold on, let me. Right there. See how the line and that goes right into the pylon. So, and this is where the Mahler actually fires. Okay, like that. So, cool. That's a good job. That's a good job on a Mahler. You know, it's a standard KR Klingon ship. You know, like a D7. And I'm assuming that the D6. You know. Yeah, the D6 will show you the same way. Okay, I think the K, if I recall correctly, that has the kind of Aztec-ing the raised thing. And, of course, you have the, I don't remember if I reviewed this last month, but the old heavy cruisers, again, I like the original design of the Federation with, you know, the old cruisers. And because again, they're compact, you know. Nothing fancy, you know. But I think I like that. Okay, anything else that's of interest? And I know we already did this from last month, and I think that's it for this month. Some really interesting miniatures. I think my favorite being, of course, the Soldra. And the Mazeron Strike Cruiser, and finally the Vari. Those are my favorites. Though I do have the honorable mention for the Mahler, just because of the Mahler. You know, the additional touches that they did to show the Mahler itself. You know, how it is a Mahler, not just this is the same ship. You know, as a D6, you know, don't you know, no much different except for the little. It's not even really a pip. It's part larger than a pip. It's, you know, this little hole here. No, it actually showed the Mahler conduit. Basically, be a bit large conduit because all you're doing is forcing energy. Because that's all a Mahler is. It's just letting go on this pure energy. That's why it's really. When it comes to targeting, it's pretty much, okay, get right in front of the ship and that's it. It's targeting that one stone and that's it. You really can't correct it like you can for like a disruptor or something along those lines. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to come for you. No, give me a sec. Let me switch application. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch it over to TalkShoes for the YouTube stream, so then you can see the chat room that's on the other side of the world, i.e. on TalkShoe. Though I'm just let you know, I am keeping an eye. When I do these podcasts and I do the YouTube stream, I do actually pay attention to the YouTube chat window, the chat part. So if you actually join us on the YouTube and want to chat there too, I will be happy to respond to anything that I think appropriate, just like I do the same thing for the talk show. Moving forward on that, what we're going to move onward to is the next topic for this evening, which is relatively simple and actually a surprising one for me. That is that I won my game. Now, here's the surprising thing for me. And the thing is, I look at it and I realized, yeah, he's right. The guy's Mike, I think Kenyon, I think is the guy's name. His call sign is Scottish Engineer. I wonder who he's referring to. Because my plan to attack was pretty basic, pretty simple. Want to get to range 5 and then just turn away and run. Or possibly, I had enough batteries to turn and launch an F-torpedo at him if I really thought it was advantageous. I mean, the tough part, as I mentioned, I think last week, with those phaser Gs. Because the phaser Gs can just shred a plasma F, which is why, you know, I probably wanted to wait until the next turn. The problem is, waiting to the next turn, my that's a lot of freaking power. That's 8 points of power for 2 S's. Right now, they only cost 4. So, I would have been going quite slowly. What I would have had to do is either do not one rolling one and then finishing one of them, and then basically lengthen the game some, and then do it that way, or possibly, you know, I could have done also the other way, which is have it rolling and then have add 2 more points of power at the very last of it and launch. You know, if I felt like I could actually get both plasma S's. And that was one thing he thought about. It was like, you know, well, he tried. Okay, what we did was he actually, I expected, when I'm looking at the situation, I'm half expecting him to sit and spin. And then he points out to me, you know, after the game, because what happened is that he went speed, I'm thinking about this right. He started at speed, yeah, I think he started speed 10, and then, started speed 10, then went down to speed 9. I was going speed, no, then went down to speed 8. I was going speed 9, I was going to go up to speed 11. And he said, you know, he had a mid-turn speed change at the latter half of the last turn, which is turn 9, to speed 17. And I'm looking at that and going, I'm doing some quick calculation, and basically, I would be able to keep out of his range, because that was my biggest I wanted to make sure I did not get close to him, because if I get close to him, he can get 32 points of damage with those two phaser Gs. But those are two phaser Gs with two stinking weapons. That's if I let him get close. But the whole idea was not to get close. So, you know, the good thing about where we ended the turn was that he was in my front extended and my rear extended arc. That gives me actually 3 phaser ones, because that's one great thing about the Firehawk. It's got these 2 forward extended phaser ones and 1 rear extended phaser one. So he was in that, on that left side portion of, you know, the left arc portion of the ship. So I was able to finagle into range 5 with my shield number 5 facing him. So even if he fired at me, no matter what he fired at me, he would be in big trouble, because he couldn't get through my shields. You know, because at range 5, even if he fired his Gats, and he got extremely lucky, that means he hit with everyone. That's 8 points of damage from that, and then he'd have another, if he rolled ones I think he had 3 phaser ones. Still, he would just barely get through my shield, my number 5 shield, which had 2 boxes off of it. So he had a very slim chance of him actually getting through my shield. But anyhow, I fire, I get through his shield number 1. I do 8 internals. When I do the 8 internals, I knock out Disruptor and quite a bit of power. Actually, 2 phaser ones, Disruptor, and quite a bit of power. And at that point, he conceded. And because of basically most of his weapons were gone. He had, I don't think he had maybe one Phaser 1 left and two Phaser Gs and no disruptors. I still had four Phaser 1s, two Phaser 3s. I had 25 points of power and two Plasma S's. And he went, I concede. And he looked at my ship versus his ship. And fortunately, my ship was larger, so I could take more of a beating and could actually take, as I mentioned before, I screwed up. And but the one thing I had to keep on just kicking myself and kicking myself and kicking myself, say, okay, don't overdo this. Because at the beginning of this game, I did something really dumb. I decided to get to range one. The problem with getting to range one was not that I got to range one. That's minor. The problem was I got to range one on a weak shield. I could have stayed. I could have turned out. I could have hit him at range two, turned out. He could have gotten possibly to range two, maybe range one, but on a fresh shield. And so I would have been so far ahead of him early in the game that I don't think he could have came back from that. But, you know, I wouldn't have had any internals at that point. And I would have gotten like 20 internals on him. I have an opportunity. Oh, I can get range four. I can get some more turn. I can get more damage. Yes. And then I think about it. It's like, no. Stick to the plan, Paul. Stick to the plan. So I stuck to the plan. I got to range five. I looked at range four. It's like, yeah, I can get a few more internals. But stick to the plan. Stay with range five. I fire. You know, do what I did, and then at that point he concedes. And after I talked to him more, I'm glad that I stuck to my guns, because to me, the one thing that really was, you know, I've done in the past, because I did this with at Origins when I was playing in the Andromedan against Black Shark, the guy. He messed up. And I went, okay, cool. I've got him. I got range two. It's like, yeah, okay. I can get to range zero and I can just blast him. He launches some shuttles. I ignore the shuttles. I come in, I think whether it's range one or range zero, I'm pretty sure it was range zero. You know what those shuttles were? Two suicides. He gets internals. I am in a much deep doo-doo consideration because I got internals on me, knocked out some of my weapons. It's like, oh, jeez. So I got overly excited at the prospect of winning big instead of focusing on, okay, sticking to the plan, because your plan is a little... It's a little conservative. A little conservative because of obviously you don't want to overplay your hand, which is what I did at the beginning of this game, and when I also playing the Andromeda at one time, playing as the Andromeda against the Black Shark, you know. And I don't want to, you know, basically shoot myself in the foot and lose a game that I've got in hand. Which is what happened with the Andromeda. So, basically, I learned my lesson after that. You would think I would. But I definitely learned my lesson after the first part of the game to not do that. So, I didn't do that, and I won. Yay! So, but as you pointed out, he couldn't sit and spin. Because he sat and spin, that gives me all the time in the world to go off, fully charge my torpedoes, come back in, and possibly even have a shield repaired, not fully, but, you know, have a couple boxes on the shield, so it has some reinforcement. So it's not all internals, and I can actually reinforce a little bit, you know, so that. Because here's the only reason I was really thinking that he was going to sit and spin. He did something crazy. In my mind, crazy. I'm still not sure why he did it. He ran his shuttles. Instead of still keeping close and attacking me, what did he do? He turned them towards himself. So I figure what he was doing, I finally thought about it. When I was doing EA and I looked at the board and I'm going, okay, why is he doing that? Why is he bringing his shuttles close in? So I thought, okay, he's bringing his shuttles close in because he wants to sit and spin and basically use them for a knife attack, you know, combat, you know, close in combat. Kind of thing where he can just beat the crap out of me with his shuttles, or as protection kind of thing, have it so I don't come in close, you know, because there's more weapons I have to face. So okay, that's why he was going to sit and spin. Nope. But as I said, after he explained it to me, that if he had actually done that, it was actually going to hurt him, because then I could go off and charge my plasma torpedoes, have them completely charged, come back in and just wipe them off the board. Even if I hit his good shield, his full shield, he still would have had issues. Because let's say that I think he had a full number six? No, he didn't have full number six. Let's say I even hit a shield number five, which I think it was 24 boxes. 24 boxes, and if I hit them both plasmas, he only can have one phaser G facing him at the time. And the thing is, he could reduce it, but he couldn't eliminate it. So I would have gotten at least 20 internals on him, in which case he was still dead at that point, you know. Which means, actually, if you think about it, before we finished up EA, he should have looked at his ship and should have conceded. Of course, the reason why you don't concede at that point, you want to see, does your opponent screw up? Because that can happen. As I said, I clinched defeat out of victory. At the beginning of the game, I could have been so far ahead. You know? Actually, that's one thing I was doing last night. I was actually starting to write it up. It's taking me a little bit of time to do a quick write-up. Because I wanted to get a write-up of people. I'm probably getting a little too much detail at the moment. Because I only got turn two. Because the tough part is actually turn two. Because in turn two, what he did, I'm looking at now. I looked at last night because it had been over a month since I'd done this, which is first turn we come at each other directly on range 9. He fires at range 9. Then we're at range 9 for another impulse. I launch my plasma torpedoes, one plasma S, one plasma F. It comes in. He turns. We're still at range 9. He fires. Okay, at range 9, he fires one disruptor. I'm sorry, two disruptors, two standard disruptors, and two phasers, which I'm looking at going, why are you waiting? Why don't you wait for impulse for range 8? No, range 9. It's like, okay. Especially with phaser once. Why are you firing phaser once? Okay. He fires, you know, like he does a couple points of damage on my shield number one. Okay, poof, woo, 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 woo. Then he turns and he hits, I think, with another disruptor because he gets four extended. But I turn away from him. So we both turn away from each other. He continues to heads, and as he continues ahead that direction, and it's obviously he's running away from the torpedoes. I turn back towards him. At that point, he has a choice. He can either, I'm ready for either situation. He can either turn up, he can turn back, you know, it's gonna keep going towards up and to the right. But now he turns down further. Turns towards the bottom right hand corner. And when I'm following him, what he decides to do, instead of turning back up, he keeps going down and around. So he faces the bottom and comes around. Which is exactly what I want him to do. Because, yeah, he beats up on my S a little bit. The first one, S or F? I forget which. But anyway, I hit him with some points of damage. Because I find out later, basically, he has no wild weasels charged. And then, as he's going down around the bottom of the board, of course, I'm facing him, so what do? I launch my other one plasma S and one plasma F. And I think what he does, he outruns the first two, and the second two he doesn't outrun and actually hits him. If I recall correctly, I have to double check the tape, or in this case, the screencast, not cast, but screen recording, because I had not actually published it yet. I need to look at it. What I'm probably going to do is actually divide it up a little bit, just because of it's a pretty long video. I might see if I can split it up per turn, maybe. You know. So that, you know, I don't have these huge videos on YouTube, but it's going to take me a while. So what I'm going to probably do is work on them this weekend. So what I'll do is see if I can trim them up a little bit, clean them up, see if there's any dead air. If there's any dead air, trim that out, all that kind of thing, so that people will enjoy it more, that don't have to sit through some of the more dead parts of the game, because I did that with the last game I posted. Did I do that, or what? I have to double check where if I edited the video at all, because I thought I might have been working on some of the video. I have to bring up, was I modifying an iMovie or Final Cut? I forget which one. Might have been iMovie, just because iMovie was simpler. I didn't need all the whatchamacallits. Though I think I for the audio podcast, I'll use Logic. I think I use Logic Pro because of when I have someone else call, sometimes I need their audio to be increased. Man, let me just tell you about one thing that happened. I was listening to this podcast earlier this week. And it's this one DevOps podcast, which I'm still debating on whether I'm going to continue to listen to. I might just unsubscribe because it's a rambling talk. No, and there's no topic. You know, it's like two guys just talking about the weekly events that happened. You know, in some cases it's weekly events that happened during that week. Sometimes it's just happens on a topic that they have, seems like they happen upon, you know, and that drives me crazy to actually listen to that kind of podcast. At least with this podcast, I try to have some topics and try to stick to them. And of course, when Barry comes, that usually goes out the window sometimes. But, Russ is here. Awesome. But anyhow, so that's, you know, so I was able to defeat them. I actually have to ping a couple people to see if they've played at all, if they've got anything done, if they've forgotten that they're in the tournament. Somebody, I forget, it was on the discussion board, was hoping to have like a weekend long tournament where people dedicate that weekend to playing online. And I would love to do that, but somebody tells me you're going to have a hard time finding people that actually dedicate, you know, be stuck in their house for the whole week, whole weekend playing SFB. Now, at least with conventions, you get out of the house, you can enjoy interacting with other people, you know, and things like that. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe we can find something somehow to do that. But anyhow, we'll move on to the next topic. Actually, we're going to go. I still have one more topic, but I'm going to sidetrack this on yet another topic. So this is the third topic for this evening. And actually, just to talk about if anybody's actually been paying attention to what's been happening on the discussion board with our dear friend Mark. Let me. Here it is. And Mark has this delusion. That's a little harsh. Misunderstanding of how the world works. Overall. Because, and Lord knows, I was dumb. Things are quiet, and what do? I post one last reply and start things up again a little bit. But hopefully, things are quieter now that the actual Radius Tournament thread actually is going to stick to the Radius Tournament, which is Radius Tournament number 48. And that is that what Mark wants, and I understand this. He thinks, oh, the way to reinvigorate it is to basically make SFB, you know, make an SFB board, virtual board game. Now, I have to look at some of the resources that have been pointed out to me. One of those was, I think, GameTable.io. I want to look at it a little more closely. Obviously, the big problem with GameTable.io is that what I was looking for and what he gave me are two different things. What he said, he showed me is, okay, GameTable.io is an example in my mind. Because I think what he's expecting, he thinks, you know, that somehow ADB will do the work and all this kind of thing. The big issue, I want to go ranting, but I'm trying not to here. Because of, I understand what he wants. And what he wants, as I said, he wants a virtual board with, you know, that has the play aids and make it somewhat automatable. But basically, the feeling I got, I'll say what I feel I got. That the feeling I got was that Mark had envisioned, I think it would make playable as a, making playing SFB harder. Yes, it would be more approachable because it would feel like a tabletop version of SFB, but I think that actually the controls would be making it more difficult to move around the counters, or even if you have miniatures. Because, I think, because Greg actually responded to him and said, are you looking for miniatures? So that's be like a spreadsheet came out of blah 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 blah. Okay, I'm just gonna move on. Okay, near future, no media. Okay, blah 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 blah. Okay, whatever. Continue on. Sorry. Okay, here it is. And yes, Greg, it's definitely a 3D and have miniatures. Look at the editors I showed that. Editors. I showed that could do this. Virtual tabletop games, yay, impulse chart, reverse impulse chart. I've never heard of that. Record keeping forms, etc. Can be laid out on the table with just click and no different than playing face to face. Something that might take one look and decide to try and get understanding. I'll have to double check, but what he gave were two ones. One was one on Steam. I have not looked closely for the one that's on Steam, which again limits who can play. But no, I'm not going to go there. And then GameTable.io, I looked at GameTable.io. That I know I did. GameTable.io, basically wants you to submit a game, and then they'll create the game for you. It's not GameTable.io is not, I was looking for a toolkit, something that I could use to create it. Even if it's using their interface, be able to log in as a creator, to find those pieces that need to be moved around the board. Maybe, you know, if they have some of custom things, like, as he mentioned, like an EA form, which basically is a spreadsheet. And have that functionality built into table game table IO. You know, that's what I thought. You know, what we want is a tool that you can express all these items, you know, relatively quickly with very little effort. Obviously, the biggest things there would be when it comes to the miniatures or even just counters and the art that goes on the, if you just have it represented as counters. Even, to me, even using miniatures, you're going to run into issues. If you're just, if all you're going to do is duels, you won't run into issues. If you want to do what some people want to do, which is actually play a fleet game, you are going to run into issues. Sorry, you're going to run into issues. And then here comes some of those, one of those things that my guess is that if you had a toolkit like this, where you actually could have energy allocation forms, which are a spreadsheet, actually the S&P Online spreadsheet, EA, actually, that's an engine, believe it or not. It's a spreadsheet type engine. In that, it knows one thing, which is, okay, you got the columns. The columns make up a term. And you can start a turn and boom, boom. But some fields are actually calculated fields. They will calculate. Actually, it actually has in the definition of the table, I actually have it so you guys can say, okay, this is calculated from this, you know, this line, this line, this line, you know, add this, add this, add this, and then subtract out this one, you know, and then at the very end I added on, you know, some verification and then some other colorization where it's like, okay, if this field is negative, then show it up as a different color, things like that. But, you know, that's, and if you have the ability to do that in a game tool, that'd be great. Unity doesn't have this, to my knowledge. As is, I have to look at Unity a little more because of, currently the only thing I can find for Unity is artifacts. You can find pieces, you can find cards, you can find all this kind of beautiful art that you can purchase for that can be part of your game. It doesn't have components, i.e. a spreadsheet component. That's one of the things that actually the Impulse Chart is. It's kind of a spreadsheet kind of component. If you ever looked at SAP Online, you know it's a table. And it's just colorized a certain way. You know? So I have to double check because I don't think he's actually looked at these. He looks at the result. He doesn't look at what features are Mark. I don't think looks at the features that are available to the game designer. Because what I think I have to when it comes to game like GameTable.io, my guess is what happens is you submit. Okay, it says here submit what the game is, when it was created, what the website is for it. My guess is that they would try to contact, you know, the creators of that game. Now, whether ADB could actually have so that they can create it for GameTable.io, I don't know. Blind guess is they probably couldn't because I can't say for sure because actually I read a post today from Steve Cole, and he says, and let me just look at this for a moment, and I'll quote it. what our contract can and cannot do. Nobody outside ADB and not everyone inside it knows the answer. Oh, I can understand that because things like Mike, who works in the warehouse, knows that answer to that. Everyone outside the core employees who have ever posted on this subject has been wrong, sometimes laughably so and sometimes annoying so. Nobody needs to ever post what ADB can and cannot do with the contract. If you see anyone do that, trust me, they're wrong. Let me know to go delete the post. If you want to know if your project fits our contract / license or does not, email me and I'll answer the only answer that matters. And I understand that. And my understanding is that my guess is that ADB can't sublicense. That would be my guess, because I still remember when I tried to get my app into the Mac App Store, because I could. You know, I said, okay, maybe I can't get the iOS app, but maybe I can get at least the Mac app, because it's completed. I can submit it, and hopefully they wanted to see the actual contract that says I can post from Paramount's IP. Well, it's not even quite Paramount's IP. It's Franz Joseph's IP. But my contract to them, and it's like, I can't show you that because I don't have the contract on me. Because actually, it's continuation of the contract from the previous owner of SFB Online. That's the truth of the matter. Now, the question always is with stuff like that is whether is actually, you know, could ADB write me up a contract real quick so I could get, because he wanted to talk to Apple directly and explain the situation, which I'm not so sure he could actually talk his way out of it. He could probably show his contract and my guess is he would say that I am a subcontractor from ADB. That's probably how he would explain it. But again, I'm not gonna say definitive one way or the other. That is my opinion, and that's where it lies. Jeez, Mark is going crazy. I'm just noticing the different aspects. Though Mark did something crazy. He went to that wasn't that center of discussion. What it was F&E computer project, the computer development. And Gene Sexton said, Mark, please call your jets on this topic. The F&E guys will let you know when they need or want your help. You know. Okay. One of the answers to Mark was, unfortunately, Mark, it's not simply not true that you can make something as good without programming it yourself. Thank you, Sam. That's what Cyberboard and Vassal are, and while they're good, it's hard to get them to keep track of stuff like economics. And Vassal, I haven't actually used Cyberboard, is slow. Anything that Richard builds is going to be much faster because it doesn't have all the overhead. To Richard, I have no Java experience myself, but if you have putting a code on GitHub or something like that, I'd be happy to contribute. So, who's this Richard? It's an okay. And actually, I've got another one, Al, who I'm working with right now. God, I love this. Mark says, you don't have to be a programmer in 2009 to recreate board games on the computer. Yes, you do. Actually, that was my point. Well, actually, you can. It's just that there's certain situations which you cannot handle. For example, SFB. What's the key portion of SFB that you need coding or someone to even think of adding support for when it comes to online gaming? That is secret announcement of the impulse activity. Mark is thinking old school. How, you know, you're thinking everything is 100%, you just basically, I'm assuming you think you just announce it, you know, verbally, you know, you have to have it, have to be talking over the internet and go, okay, let's announce it. And that's, and then say, oh, wait, well, you know, I have something before it. Now, this is where it drives me crazy with SFB, that where the online edition actually is better because of it can solve the problem of you announce, oh, I'm going to do something. I have some launch, or yeah, I have some fire. The whole issue where, you know, the whole call for fire thing happens. But even call for fire, see, the thing is, the call for fire, here's how it works differently. Call for fire in real life, you announce, I've called for fire. At that point, then your opponent says, okay, do I want to launch something before the fire segment comes up? That's how it works. That's not how it's supposed to work, at least according to the rules. My understanding of the rules is that you're supposed to go through each segment, and each segment you say, oh, you have an action, have an action, have an action. That's what you're supposed to do. And what happens is, as a hack, call it kind of a light hack, where you actually announce, you call for fire, so, and then that skips everything. And says, okay, well, but that allows the person that's playing against you to know that you're going to fire, or possibly fire, and that they should do whatever they need, which is transport, boarding parties, launch shuttles, launch plasmas, launch drones, everything before you fire. It's called metagaming. While even with call for fire for SFB Online, all you know. Is that your opponent has clicked on the activity button. That's all you know. Do you know when his activity is? No, you do not. Do you know, because even the call for fire, in my mind, all it means is that it gives people the ability to actually fire themselves. You can do a call for fire, it's like, oh, so maybe I want to fire too. Now, in theory, this gets down to metagaming, big surprise. And that is that you can actually click the impulse, the activity button, and bump, the activity window comes up and says, okay, you have activity for me? And you can say, you can wait for like 2 minutes and not do anything. Just sit there. Take a drink, wet your whistle with whatever drink, Diet Coke, bottled water, whatever. And then decide, no activity. And that, basically the whole idea of that is metagaming. It's a psychological approach. And same for call for fire. You can say call for fire. And that might force someone to launch or a drone or a plasma torpedo. Fine. Launch them. I'm not firing. And say, call for fire. And I say, you're launching. Oh, I'm not going to fire anymore. Because you launched something. And you still got that whole psychological factor of things. See, that's the nuttiness of it. But, okay, that's one thing that cannot be duplicated. And as pointed out by, I said Sam, I think it was. Yeah, Sam. And that is, when it comes to the economics, in theory, yes, you can do the economics in your head, on a spreadsheet on the side. You can do everything. Why do we have the computer in front of us if we can't use it to do some of this more menial tasks? For example, when it comes to, S&P and the energy allocation, how do you know someone's not screwing up? For example, currently S&P Online, one thing when it comes to energy allocation, automatically it adds up how many warp boxes do you have? How many impulse boxes do you have? How many APR boxes do you have? It automatically calculates that for you. Then, of course, it's like a normal spreadsheet. It adds up and subtracts up using formulas. It tells you, okay, here it is at the end. Also, then you have a wonderful speed plot chart. This is something that I don't think you cannot. It's one of the things I don't think you can do without actually programming it, which is the whole idea of a speed plot. So it actually counts up, because I can't imagine any game actually doing this. Because to my knowledge, the only proportional movement game that I've ever found is SFB. Or Fedcom, which is works it a little differently. SFB is alone in the way they do it. Which is, okay, you can, the way I have it in SFB Online, which is relatively simple, is you highlight, you click on the speed on the, and the impulse that you want to start that speed. Click on that box. Boom. It fills in from that point all the way down to the bottom. It assumes that you want to go all the way to the end of the term. And then you click another one where you want to change your speed. And then it stops that speed and goes on to the next speed. And all that speed goes all the way down to the bottom of the term. And then you just keep clicking, down the different impulses. Now, the thing is, okay, now how do you calculate that up? In theory, you can do that purely by yourself, yes. And you can even have it so, okay, make it so it's a dumb table. So you kind of highlight it, just hold your mouse down and you click and drag, click and drag, click and drag, and then you can count it up all yourself. But why? Why would you do that? The only reason I could ever imagine you actually wanting to do that is because of you can't. Because that's the great thing about having the computer there. The computer can automatically calculate everything for you. It could even do some double checking on the rules and say, oh, that's an illegal speed plot because you decided to change speed on impulse 3. You can't. You have to wait to impulse 4 to actually have your first midterm speed change. Or you try to do a midterm speed change after impulse 27. Actually, after impulse 28. You announce on 27, you can change it on 28. So on 29 or 30 or 31, you try to change midterm speed change. You can't do that. It's illegal. So, the SAP Online client actually warns you of this fact that you're trying to do something illegal. Now, I was talking to Al earlier this week, I just remind him that it does not enforce that rule. It doesn't say, nope, you can't, if it's not a legal speed plot, you can't do that. I go, no, you can do that. If you want to have an illegal speed plot, that's fine because of, as I mentioned to him, you can have special rules for a ship. You can be playtesting new rules for a ship that allows a ship to change its speed, every 4 impulses. You still have maybe the beginning and the end part, but normal ships can only change it every 8. And I think X ships and Nimble ships, I think, can do it every 6. I forget if X ships can actually do it like every 4 or just, I think X ships, yeah. I think first generation X ships, all of them are considered nimble. So I think they all can do it every 6 impulses. I have to double check because I even do that. If it's if you actually entered in the information about the ship that says, oh, this is an X ship, then it won't, then it will allow you to do that. It actually recognizes that. But anyway, that takes programs. And then, of course, then there's interaction with the actual SSD. Why in God's green earth would you actually want to roll the dice yourself for every single internal? Okay, you got 40 internals. Okay, you have to roll the dice 40 times. You have to look up your DAC, and you have to then allocate the actually damage to that ship. And you're going to do this without any programming whatsoever. You can do that, but it's going to be like you're playing there, you know, in first person, where you have to go through the DAC and go, okay, you know, for those people who've ever done a DAC in real life, invariably you use like use a coin, or actually what I used to do is grease pencils. I have the DAC underneath this sheet of plastic. I had the kind of the plastic that you could clear plastic ones that you could put into billfolds. The hole punch binders, those binders. And I put it in there. I put the DAC in there. So then what I could do is I could then cross off when, like for the single usage DAC, page protectors. Thanks, Russ. And I could just mark them off. And if I want to, I can mark down like how many for each one of them if I wanted to. Usually it was easier for me was for the actual SSDs, when I mark damage, is that when you're done marking all the damage, you fill them in. And so that when the next time you do damage allocation, you do a slash. And when you did that slash, that was indication of damage that was allocated for that volley. And then you could go back and just check the count. Blah, 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 blah. You know, Lord knows, I still remember getting a handful of dice. And I still remember at one point we actually had to say, okay, what is the order of the dice? Because then at one point we actually realized the order of the dice matters. Because the order of dice matters. Because if you don't specify the order of the dice, it actually can change the way what actually gets, how the damage actually gets allocated. Just because of, you might hit something that no longer exists if you do it one way, in which case you get a little deeper for one of those die rolls, while beforehand you wouldn't get that deep. You know? So we realized all that. So, sorry, I went on a minor rant about, I think, Mark being completely unrealistic in his thoughts about thoughts about that, oh, you can actually create a game without, you know, a tactical board game without any programming. I'm actually going to do this. Actually, he showed one, which is Game Maker Studio. I'm actually going to look at it and just see if are there any videos on that. And hopefully there is, in which case I can take a look at it a little more. I agree. My guess is that it would still be some quite basic, because I'm looking at some of the examples right now, and looks like you add assets to the board, and it looks like actually you create a board like a dungeon. But I don't think that you actually can do SFB. But I will check on that. So actually with that, I think we will wrap up for this evening. I never got to the whole idea of creating narratives, but I'll pick that up next week. And so we can talk about creating narratives, which I think is key for making things interesting for playing SFB. And of course, then there's the whole thing with Starfleet Warlord and creating a narrative there. What I would really like to see with actually Starfleet Warlord is more people writing up like their stories on a Starfleet Warlord. And the whole idea of you are the commander of this corporation and you go tell people to, okay, you need to go check out, scan sector because we think the enemy's there, blah, blah, blah. Kind of add this narrative to the action of the player. Well, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.